Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we, isolate that clip? Nia Jack weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the Big A to Z show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in Southern California. Getting warm around here. Very nice to be with you tonight as things seem to be settling down in numerous ways here around us. I'm pleased to bring back to the program our friend Kevin from the Cape, now somewhere else in Massachusetts, and that's part of what I wanted to talk to him about. I don't know. I keep forgetting where he lives, like what part of the state, but we'll get to that in a bit. Then I wanted to talk to him about shower beer. We were supposed to bring that up a long time ago, but now is the opportunity to do it. And then we'll just talk about life. We are still quarantined, but we are seeing signs that things are starting to finally slow down with the virus spread, and that is big news for all of us. I will say, whether this means anything or not, because the official numbers can only be a fraction of what's actually out there, we have the fewest number of new cases as we start our recording tonight, around 9 o'clock Eastern time, and the number of new cases today is 22,963. This could probably might go up a little bit in the next hour, but that would, if it stands... Even if it doesn't, like, if it's less than 25,000 for today, as we record the program, that is the fewest number of new cases going all the way back to March 30th. So from March 31st on, we had at least 25,000 something new cases every day, at least. And it went as much as up to as many as 38,958 in a day. That was actually just a few days ago, but I think what that was just accounting for a lot of lost time. I think some tests were not accounted for, and they're just like retroactively adding them. But either way, to see a number under 25,000 this late in the game, that's a big sign for us and a big sign for life. So I think that's really interesting. Well, we'll have a lot of other things to talk about tonight. We won't focus too much on the coronavirus stuff. I mean, we've beaten it to the ground by now. Every episode we've had something on it. We can take a break from that tonight. So as our A to Z series goes up to the letter Q. Quarantine episode. So we've been talking this up a while. Kevin and I have been looking forward to doing a de facto random questions show. Though I didn't really have the presence of mind to ask for any questions, but I don't feel like I need any. I have like one, and he has one, and I feel like that's enough tonight. It's not going to be that long a show, but let's bring out back Kevin on the program. Hey, how's it going, buddy?
That's great, man. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing great. I am doing pretty great,
just
too.
Just how warm is it over there?
It's not that bad. It's. I think it's maybe upper 70s. That's it. It's actually pretty nice.
Yeah.
What's it like over there?
That's nice. It's freezing, Dave.
What? You kidding me?
It's, it's freezing. It's 40s on a good day. Snow a couple times this last week.
Wow.
And I pretty much want to move. I've had it. my wife knows how much I have come to hate. And it's not an old man like hatred of the cold. It's just, and it was last week, and we have these long windows like kind of like above our bed. And she got up first, and she's like, "Uh-oh." I'm like, "What?" She's like, "Just go back to sleep." I'm like, "What is it?" I thought like maybe like the tree fell in the garage or something, or the loud neighbors were up early. There's garbage everywhere. I don't know. but it was the snow. And she's just like, don't, just don't look at it. And I got up and I'm like, that's it. We're leaving. I've had it. We're done. We're going somewhere warm. Of course, we can never agree on if we ever did go. We're slowly chipping away. I'm chipping away at like her exterior for beating it down. Like, you know, we couldn't agree on Florida. That's out because just all the wackos that live there. I just want to say screw it and go straight to like the Caribbean somewhere. But, you know, just working and money and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so I'm still holding out. I'm like one of the two people that are holding out for like her company to force her to go to California. Like to come, well, you got to come to the home office. She's like, no, they don't. I'm like almost this close to like starting to send emails to like her bosses. Like, you know, I really think we would do better in California. You know, I think your company would benefit from having her there.
Yeah. Well, again, just stay. I would say if you're going to do that, find an area that's not so central to like a big city, and you might be able to have some. You might be able to. The cost of living might be all right for you guys.
Oh yeah, well, they're in the middle of nowhere. You know, they're like the closest, the biggest town to where all the farms are is Chico, which is
okay. Well, I mean,
I think that's
Chico,
like. I think that's like kind of 80,000-90,000 people. That's kind of too huge.
No. Chico's no, but it is kind of still expensive even in Chico. So
yeah. Well, it's all California, you know. But
yeah, that's sort of it. Like Florida, you didn't have to worry as much about the cost of living, as you can see from our.
That's the thing. She like when she realized there's no like the income tax thing in the whole thing of Florida. She was like, ooh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So I was trying to find like a town that wasn't. There's not everything. It's not, you know, the stuff you see on Cops and the weird those weird reality shows.
I think John, aka Yachts, settled on a pretty decent compromise with Orlando. That's probably as good as it's going to get from the. How do you tone down the Florida nonsense type city?
Yeah, I can't even believe that he's there. I mean, I can't. I haven't spoken to him. We never got to the point where I texted or emailed him or anything. So I have so many. I'm fascinated by that move because he didn't seem like that kind of person. Florida, there's like a kind of a personality, especially when you're young. When you're old, whatever, you go retire there because it's cold and. I mean, because it's cold where you live in New England, and I mean, half of Florida is old New Yorkers and old people from Connecticut and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But he's my age, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
He's not anywhere near retiring.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but he had a similar personality to you in that he has never been a fan of cold weather. He hates it. He just won't tolerate it, and he just said enough was enough at some point. Got an offer and decided to move on down. And he's done.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never. The snow is doesn't really bother me. It's like I've told you before, it's like just the frozen weather that has turned the last, I don't know, 10 years, eight or ten years. It's different now, and this is absurd, Dave. I mean, we're at the end of April now, and
yeah, I was going to tell you.
We didn't go outside. We haven't gone outside. For any like we always go for a couple walks every day and it's ridiculous, and for me it's taken a different turn with the heart stuff where it's just not it borders on being unsafe like to go outside and when it's like I said the snow is no big deal we go play in the snow all the time it's that like 0, 5 degree, 10 degree for long stretches that's a really difficult part so. We'll see. A couple years, you know. Well, I'm working on it.
Yeah.
She always has that thing in the back of her pocket because, you know, she works from home. And she's like, hey, if you get a job somewhere warm, we'll go. So, I'm like, damn it. Like, it really is all up to me, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, a good compromise would be, like, Maryland, right? Wouldn't that be a reasonable compromise?
Or no, Maryland.
No.
Maryland is too rednecky for me.
Oh, even Maryland. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I believe. I'm sure you're right.
There's a few spots of like, I always say like, there's a few blue dots in like the seas of red in the South, and There's not, like I said, there's not many.
No.
There's, like, the bigger cities, you could, there's, especially the, near, like, universities, there's a little more,
like, let me ask you this. Like, how would you put, where would you put Raleigh in the middle of that? Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah, I was just about to say North Carolina. I was going to focus on that, North Carolina. Like, the Raleigh-Durham area is a little more forward-thinking, and it's partly to do with the university kind of influence, all the schools there, which most college towns are tend to be a little more, you know, forward-thinking or a little more open-minded, I guess, that I've seen. The, like, pockets of, like, Austin, Texas, or Asheville, North Carolina, they're way more, they're just, like, they're wacky. I mean, they're like Portland, Oregon, or they're awesome in that way, as far as being like kind of left-leaning, a little more tolerant, which is nice. But yeah, those college towns are cool, but there's still a lot of, I think Charlotte is like a huge banking capital. Like I think there's a lot of like bank, you know, headquarters of big banks there, and that's exploded, kind of like Nashville has.
That's true. That's true.
So that's a very getting kind of expensive too.
That is also true. Yeah, yeah. A lot of people are moving to have been moving to Charlotte or the area of Charlotte. And I don't really put.
I'm cursed too, dude, because I still love the mountains. So it's like you know, you're still going to get a little cold. If you go towards there, you know.
Yeah, but I can't imagine it be as bad. Like, yeah, I mean.
No, like Asheville, North Carolina. Asheville, North Carolina is still my favorite favorite town, and that's still probably where I would always lean to move to.
That sounds nice. Yeah, Asheville. Yeah.
Yeah, Asheville. Asheville goes to, I don't know, like down to like the 30s at the lowest, I guess, maybe 30, 40, which is nice.
That is nice. Well, see, so you got some ideas. That's pretty good. Very nice to have a game plan. And I figure it's going to happen at some point. I'm willing to rename you from Kevin. I don't even call you on the Cape anymore. You're from the Cape because you don't live there now. I mean, I wanted to ask for our audience one more time.
Yeah, I was never even from there originally. I was just there when your show took off.
Right.
It kind of worked too with my first name. I think I went up back on your website. Or the Podbean thing a few months ago, and I listened to the very first show. Or not the very first show, but the show where you made the name or something, I think.
That would have been – you were christened Kevin on the Cape during our first Super Bowl, either our first or the second Super Bowl.
Something like that, yeah.
Cockpit show. Yeah, that's what I remember. And that is interesting because as I was saying to our friend Jerry Frum, now I have to say Frum because he's not there anymore either. Jerry from Piscataway, the other episode we did, whenever that was, I think it was a week ago, things like this come organically. That's what's amazing. Like, I never had a plan to call you Kevin on the Cape. It just, we were talking and then we just collectively just came up with it. And same idea with random questions. Like, it was never a plan. I'm just like, oh, I don't have anything to do. I'm just going to have you guys ask some questions.
Yeah, and then we got that. I remember you being like, you're emailing or something in between the first one and the second one, being like, all these, you went, you know, the chat room was going crazy, and then like that was actually kind of funny, and people are wondering why someone who worked in sports journalism for so long doesn't care about sports. They want to know more. Like, all right, whatever, let's do it.
That's pretty great. Yeah. That's what drove it for so many years. And, you know, I've always had this idea of doing the same thing, like just listening to the old shows we did and just do it like on a loop and just have it go. And we probably would have like, by now, gosh, how many random question shows do you think we did? Like 100 by now? At least.
Yeah, definitely. It was at least... Like three quarters of the year. I mean, we didn't miss too many, and you don't really shut it down, do you? I mean,
no, it's just, it's,
I know,
more
some
sporadic.
Podcasters shut it down. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess we can use like post I guess post-heart. I mean, I don't even know if I'd say post-heart surgery. I'd just say post-leaving Blog Talk Radio more accurately, because that was around fall 2015. I think since that time, since 2015, it's been a more like a special than a regular feature.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, I remember it was, well, you know what, we took sort of like a little break when I did that on the road tour, but that actually yielded my in-studio appearance.
Yeah.
Totally worth it.
That was earlier in that year, too. So, like, that's interesting, yeah. It was a great job.
Yeah, that was 15, I think, yeah.
Yeah, 2015.
So it's over 100, so that you count those. And then, and especially in the beginning, the first, like, 3 years probably, or maybe even more than that, the questions were unbelievable. So there was multiple good ones in each show, so... Mm-hmm. And then there was, you know, hijacking the program, and then there were the times where you had the first hour. There was a lot of times where that was really good, because that time where you, like, the first hour you did your kind of normal show, and then stuff was going on, and then it would kind of lead into that, and like the whole 2 hours, and then we would always go way past the hour anyway. So it was,
right.
I mean. For you, that was a long night. I mean, I would usually. I remember. I was so, like, out there too on the Cape with not much.
Yeah.
At one point, I had no computer, and I was just working all day, and then I would do your show. So I would tell you, I'm going to call in to listen to the first hour, but I don't want to talk until, you know, obviously our show. So I would just have my phone sitting on, like, on the charger on speaker while I was making dinner or doing whatever, just so I could listen to the first half, because I had no other way of listening.
I do remember that. You know, I would have you on the line, and it was just, you were just there just to tune in. That was always interesting. And it's like, it's a really creative way to listen to the show. Like, if you want to listen to it live.
That was all I could do, because it was so much fun, and I wanted to
be
part of the whole program. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I can probably just call in and listen. That's what I do, except I just talk on the second hour.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, you could totally do that.
It was very fun. That was just lightning in a bottle. We had the community, and it's just funny. Like I said before, once you break that, it's hard to rebuild it. Like, it's just, it would be like moving Miami Vice from like 10 p.m. to 9 p.m. or something like that. Like, it just breaks everything. Like, and it's just not the same. So, like, once you settle into a groove, like, you ride it as long as you can. And it really did. I think we went how many years? Like 11, 12, 13, definitely. And then maybe we were into 2014 a good amount too. So that's like four solid years of doing the live thing with the random questions.
Oh, easily.
So, yeah, but like we were talking about too, like the I wouldn't call it decline, but like the reduction, the slow erosion of the chat room and such coincided with the slow erosion of the board itself. And I'm sure people know that by now. I don't think that's.
Oh yeah,
I'm not breaking any news here, but it is what it is, and we can appreciate what we had.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you know, I tried Twitter to get more random questions. That didn't take. I tried to make my own chat. Remember that? That didn't take either. I didn't understand that, because like you didn't even need a login or anything. You just clicked the link, and people just, like I said, like once you're out of the routine, it's just tough to get back into a new one. So
yeah.
I never figured out how to do it. The best we could do was whenever we would build up to a show, we would, you know, put out a call for questions, either on the Twitter or on the board, and then I would get some responses and even texts.
Yeah, it's not the same, because like when you were doing it, when we were doing it live at night, everyone they had a few drinks, they were watching whatever baseball game was on, like everyone was all. It was sort of, they didn't have to sit, like, think of something and type it in the middle of the day, like when they're working or with their family and stuff. It was more, they were sort of the part of the program at that point, because they have you on in the background, and they have, or the game on in mute or whatever, and then they're hanging out. So they're a little more loosey-goosey, as are one of our old namesakes.
I have to thank the Mets and the Yankees for a lot of our success. Because they were a great lead into us. Like, it would be right about 10 o'clock when we'd start the show. And that's usually when those two games are ending, right? So, you're right. And it built up a really good transition. Like, people would be there, then they get on the computer, they turn on the show, and They'd be chatting about the game, or and then we would get into sports.
Yeah, like some implosion by some Mets relief pitcher would set off everything.
Well, that happened more than a couple times, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Were we on the air when the Castillo drop ball happened? I don't remember. That might have been so long ago that it predates the show. Like, I'm trying to remember that for myself. I can't remember. Do you remember?
I feel like we either were or there was. I have a memory of that happening while, or either you did a whole piece on it.
I think what happened is we probably brought it up, but I'm reading it. I just looked it up. I think that happened in 2009, so we weren't live yet. So I guess it was just before we started getting into live shows and so on. Man, that was something though, huh?
Yeah. I guess that was the year they won the World Series, right? 2009.
Actually that was. Yeah, 2009, Yankees World Series, which is, I mean, look, I no disrespect to all our friends here who listen and follow the Yankees and everything, but man, that is like one of the cheapest World Series ever. It's like, well, they're supposed to win. They spent all this money on like big name players and they won. And it was like, what did they really achieve? Because it's like they were already so good, and then they just brought in CC Sabathia. And it just never felt so, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
It's hard to explain, but I think even if I was a fan of the Yankees, I would feel like, well, yeah, I mean, we won, but, you know, what did we win? Like, we just pretty much had a good team, and then we bought, like, a really expensive player. And it wasn't really a whole lot of drama in the postseason anyway. Like, the Angels, I think, only pushed them to, like, 5 games in the ALCS, and then the Phillies series was kind of good, but did you ever get the feeling the Phillies were going to challenge them? No, not really. Not that year. So, it was weird.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, Kev, like, I guess we're getting too much into sports, which let's transition away from.
Well, that was the outlier, though, for that like generation of the Yankees, because
it was
after the dynasty part, which were all kind of the trades and the acquisitions weren't any huge people. You know, they were all really good players, and then most of the group had grown up with the Yankees. Then that all ended with the Giambi stuff, and then Clemens, and then bringing, you know, these big names with these huge contracts and A-Rod and all that stuff. So the model of the buying the players actually worked against them for so long.
That is right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, and then you had the Red Sox, you know, 2004, 2007, and then the Yankee thing. You know, they went against what they did in the '90s. They got them to be this humongous, just juggernaut, and then so. 2009 was really just kind of like that's kind of weird. You know, they haven't been, I guess, sorry, it was bound to happen one year, and then obviously it hasn't happened for another 10, so.
Yeah, when you go through the entire, you know, the final 2 decades, you know, leading up to now, you're absolutely right, because buying a team didn't actually get them to those titles, and I think most Yankee fans would agree with that. Like, they knew that it was built with the farm. It was built with, you know, timely acquisitions and everything. And
no, it keeps them relevant. Well, you know, all the money, it keeps them relevant. It keeps them in, you know, first or second place every year, no matter what.
Yeah, but what does
it
do in the
postseason? Not really what Yankee fans care about anymore.
No. They never did. Would they have been hooting and hollering about division championships 20 years ago? No.
No. 30, yeah. Like, early 90s, the 80s had gotten pretty pathetic. After the 90s were over, they weren't going to. They weren't hooting. I remember when the Mets hung up, like, the division series banner, you know. The Yankee fans went crazy. They went absolutely nuts. Like, we would never do that. That's like, all right, calm down, everybody. You know?
Well, it's just different. It's just a different world, like different perspectives and expectations. It's no doubt. I remember one time Jerry was talking about how what year was it? 2013 was a disappointing year, and I'm like, they won 85 games. Like, it was wasn't a bad team, but he clarified that it was a disappointing year, uninspiring, and I think that was fair, because like you were saying, they were in it. They were irrelevant, but not necessarily a threat to be a championship team. in a lot of that time.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, the Castillo scenario was before we were doing our thing. That's too bad. That would have been a fun episode if we were doing our thing back then. And yeah. Did you watch that game in like live when it happened?
I feel like that was Sunday Night Baseball or something, but
okay. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of that was a very
It's certainly something you remember over time, like many years. I mean, and you remember the good side if you're a Yankee fan, and or in your case, the bad side as a Met fan. And if you ever watch the clip of it, I mean, you hear like all the different broadcasters on both sides like get into it, and it's very interesting how differently they replay that clip.
Oh yeah, and my the only thing I remember now when I look back at it, I don't remember when I watched it last, but because he's become such a tool. I mean, well, he always was, but A-Rod, who popped, you know, who the pop up, right?
Right.
He throws his bat down like a child when he pops up, and then he's this guy, second baseman Castillo, just, you know, craps all over himself and drops, and then A-Rod's acting like, you know, he just hit a grand slam off, you know, Randy Johnson in the bottom of the 10th. It's like, dude, you just little leagued your way down to first, throwing your bat and crying like a child, and now you're, you know, you think you're this conquering hero. You're not you know, Piazza after 9/11 would bomb all, you know, or any other Yankee, you know, even Larritz or Joe Girardi with the triple. You're not these guys. Calm down.
Yeah, you're not Don Mattingly '95 division series hitting one, making the roof shake on the old Yankee Stadium.
So yeah,
it's not even in this same ballpark at all. It is interesting how much A-Rod has rebuilt his reputation since stopping baseball. Like since he retired from playing baseball, yeah, he's just become like this guy that, oh man, this is like a cool guy because of all the commentating he's doing, and then like the interviews, and I hear some rumblings that he's trying to buy part of the Mets, and I think Met fans are getting into it now, and I just think that's so funny how he used to be just this really pouty, annoying guy that was very good at baseball, but he often had a little bit of an issue with, I think, I don't know what the word of this for this is, but always trying to seek approval from everybody. And he was an awkward guy, like when he played. And it's
weird. I mean, he had many instances of just Bush League childlike behavior.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I don't know about, I mean, who he's, I guess, like you say, I'm out of it. But I mean, he'll never, as far as rebuilding his image, he's always going to be a douche in my book. I don't care how many, you know, like all the stuff he clapping around, going around third base, trying to distract guys catching, you know, like stuff that, like little league bullshit that he did, and that was just the stuff that people caught on national TV. I'm sure there's tons and tons, and plus from day one, I don't care what anyone says, he was cheating from day one. This is not Ken Griffey we're talking about. This is, you know, and then the argument is the same. You know, there's other people who did it, I'm sure, but that's fine too. And there can be, I can not like them just as much. But this is one of the most dishonest athletes in the history of this country.
It's very fair, very fair. So, and I do think he's a very good commentator, and it's actually a very fascinating listen. Wherever you hear him, whether it's on like post-game show on Fox in the playoffs or on the regular season during Sunday Night Baseball, but the fact remains, I think as a player he was a very annoying guy.
Very annoying. So, but hey man, if someone who was body slammed or body slammed Vince McMahon, I'm not really sure, Ben can become the president, A-Rod can buy the Mets. What the hell, it's America.
I would feel more comfortable with A-Rod in charge of the Mets than the other thing that you just mentioned. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you can't really mess them. Taking over the dumpster fire that is the Mets.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot less impact.
It can only go up.
A lot more callers, so the fan would be calling about that than they would be about the Orange Man in the White House.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that question. I had a question about shower beer. So we've been meaning to talk about this for a while. And I think that what you told me was that shower beer is not a recent phenomenon at all. And for our audience, I was interested to hear your background on it and how you first learned of it many, 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 many more years ago than we all expected you to do so. What's the scenario with shower beer? Why is it a thing? How did it become a thing? And why are people so lazy?
So this came up on another show of yours that people were doing this, and is that what happened?
Well, I think it's just been my understanding of like just seeing commercials about it, seeing other podcasts get into it, and then people on the internet talking about how great it is. And so it was on a show that we did where I asked, like, what is the deal with shower? Or maybe it was in the text. I asked about shower beer. Like, hey, we should do a random questions about this. And then we were going to, and that was the part A of our show, of our series. And then we wound up not getting to it because we had so much other stuff. But
right.
We have the time tonight. So this would be a very interesting thing to get into. What is it? I just don't understand. Who came up with the idea? Like, well, I'm going to take a shower and I'm going to bring a beer and then drink it while I'm showering. I'm like, I never understood how those two things came together.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm not a historian on this one, but I mean, I can still remember it happening. For me, I think it was, I was 19, I would say. So this is a long time ago, Dan. Yeah. We're talking 1995,
that is,
probably.
Yeah.
My first time, you know, so I, as we've talked about before, I grew up in the Irish Catholic area. Like, drinking beer was around a long before I was 19. So none of that was new, but when I was 19 was the first time I was out of like the college dorm. So there was no real, I could walk around, you know, I rented a house with some guys. So you could walk around with beers and not have to worry about being 19. You know, in the college dorm, everyone still drank, but you had to kind of keep it, you know, on the down low.
Mm.
But at my first apartment, I remember the house had, it was me and four, all older guys, all like 21, 22 year old dudes, and we were getting ready to go out, or you know, we were going to the bar or something, and I was upstairs. I lived downstairs with my buddy Desmond, and the three guys lived upstairs. So we were upstairs like playing darts, and I see one of my roommates. He comes out of the bathroom with like one hand around this towel around his waist, and the other hand had a beer in it. And I was like, dude, did you just take a beer to the bathroom? Like, and he's like, yeah, I do it all the time before we go out. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, did you think of it? Or did you invent this? And he's like, I don't think so. I'm sure I saw someone else do it, but I don't know who. And I just couldn't get, I was like, that's phenomenal. And they all must have either, I don't know if they all did it, but I know my buddy Tony, he walked out with like a Bud can, and He was like, yeah, you know, you got to start, you know, he said something, you know, pre-gaming before we go out. And but he had the whole thing. This was like 100% Italian guy. So, like, he was getting ready to go out. He was looking good. So he had time for the whole beer in there. Like, he brought the beer in. He shaved. He took a crap. Danny went to a shower. So, I mean, by the time he was done, the beer was empty. I mean, because my first thought was like, what's the point? You take a shower, it's over in 5 minutes. Are you just shotgunning beers while you're showering? But no, he had his whole routine. So that sort of made sense. And then a couple of days later or a week later, I'm like, I'm going to try this. And it just, but you can't just do it. I mean, there's not rules, but there's some, to make it a good experience, a positive experience, there's some things you got to do. You can't just like hop in there with like your favorite beer and expect it to just be like you're hanging out with your buddies at a barbecue. There's a different kind of system for it. With my experience, it's the beer, obviously it has to be a can. I mean, that's just number one, without a doubt. If you're bringing bottles into this shower, you're just an idiot. You're asking to cut your foot open or worse. You're other parts of your body that you do not want to be cut with glass while you're naked. So that's number one. Number two is it has to be literally ice cold. It's for some reason I remember it being you know, just out of the fridge, you know, but just like, we're talking about like cooler packed with ice cold. It just made it so much better. I mean, there's like the hot water is coming on you. The beer is super cold. There's just something about that like juxtaposition where you get this like cold thing going on your inside and the hot thing on your outside. It's a feeling that to this day I've never been able to replicate, even with, you know, now that I don't drink anymore, tea or whatever you want to do. And it's not with, if you're hot on the inside and cold on the outside. It has to be done that way. And then really the third, I guess the only other rule would be you got the can and you got to be, you know, as cold as you can get it. And it can't be fancy, I guess, is the other one. You know, fancy beer is not for the shower. I guess that's why cans are, you know, back then cans weren't considered fancy at all. Now, you know, you can go to a craft brewery or a place for an opening and spend $20 on 4 cans. So for those guys out there now who might be listening, don't use your, you know, heady topper in the shower. That's just a waste. That kind of a beer needs to kind of be a little more savored and have a little more focus on the beer, not, you know, washing your balls and your armpits and then, you know. So, and that's it. I mean, and I did it for probably 15 years, maybe less than 20, probably almost 20 years. Probably I did that. And it was usually coincided with going out, like for the night,
okay.
Like going somewhere. It wouldn't be every night, like, or you come home from work and it would kind of be like your first beer of the night, but you know, you're multitasking, Dave, you know, you're cleaning yourself up for the night, but you're also getting that first one down, first one in you, you know, maybe mm-hmm. you're getting a little older, you know, so you've got a little more creaks in your shoulder and your back and stuff. You want to kind of feel a little better before hitting the town. So that's sort of another part of it. It wasn't usually done where after that you would just sit on your couch and watch the game. It was, you were getting out to go out, meet some friends or go to a concert or that kind of stuff. And that's what it was.
Well, Kev, I thank you for clearing that up, because that had confused me for years. I could not understand the purpose or the objective, and you've basically shined a light on all of that. So that makes sense. So it's an experience, probably as much as it is just having a beer. Obviously, you can have a beer anywhere, but
right,
it integrates itself into the routine. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. That does.
Yeah, and if any of the youngsters out there, forever, I would, my favorite, there's this beer, I'm sure it still exists, but it was called Dale's Pale Ale, which was, I think it's Colorado Oscar Blues, I think was the name of the brewery and stuff. Mm-hmm. That was my favorite. I mean, I tried like the Bud cans and some of the other like Natty Lights and this cheaper stuff when we were in college, and went through all those. And then when you get out of school and you have some extra money to, you know, to graduate to the beers that's not going to give you the shits all day. That was my favorite. That was a really good one. It wasn't fancy, but it wasn't shitty. It was like nice, I don't know, like $10 probably for a six pack or something. I have no idea now. It's been so long. I haven't drank.
I have not. You might be an East Coast thing, because I don't really see him around here too much.
Yeah, I know. I remember spotting them when I lived in Denver, and so I know that they're started in Colorado. I have no idea what happened after that.
You might be right. I think I did see one in Denver. Yes. I think I remember seeing one in Denver. Yeah. Yeah. Because like, I'd go to bars and I'd see the sign for it. So.
Yeah.
Because I just looked it up right now and I'm like, oh, wait a second. And I'm like, I remember the sign. I remember the logo. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's a strange word too. It's Oscar, but it's not spelled the way you would expect Oscar to be spelled.
O-S-K.
There's a K in there.
Yeah. I don't, you know, and now that I think of it, maybe I did have one, because I went to a bunch of bars when I was in Denver, meeting friends and everything. So, it is possible.
Yeah, you've got some buddies in Denver, don't you?
I do, and my buddies, we talked about this on a previous podcast, but they moved to a new house, so they were on the podcast, and
That's
very
awesome.
Happy for them. my friend Coach and his girlfriend Karen, they moved to a very nice house. It looks like a ski lodge in there. It's very cool. So happy congratulations to them. They're just getting everything sorted out. It's interesting they were able to move like that during coronavirus, but they did. They did most of it themselves, and then they got a couple movers to help them at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just it must be great to move to a house when you get a lot of extra space. And I suspect you guys had a similar experience when you moved to where you live now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Our house is pretty big for us. I mean, we always, since we've been together, I mean, I've always had small places. I was around apartments for 20 years. I'd say we doubled the size of the apartments we lived in together, the three or four that we had together, to the house that we have now.
Yeah. Let me ask you another random question. Let's take you back in the timeline a bit. Let's go back to when you were on the east side, I think, in New York. What were your favorite go-tos there when you were in Manhattan? Or maybe you weren't in Manhattan. I thought you were, though. You said you worked in Manhattan or something. No. You lived in Manhattan, but worked in Stamford. Something like that.
Right, correct. And I spent a lot of time in both of those places, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what part of Manhattan? Was it the East Side? Was it Upper East? Upper West?
Yeah, well, my friends that I hung out with all the time were in, the East of, the high 60s, 69.
Oh, wow. Well, that's nice, yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know New York nearly as much as you or anybody else from our board universe, but I've always had the impression that the East Side had better food. Would you agree with that, or do you think it's a wash?
Yeah, I think that's true. Back then, it wasn't amazing. I think it's gotten much better. But yeah, I think that's generally it's generally an accurate statement for New York.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on what kind of food you're in the mood for. But like basic food, like bagels and stuff, and I just feel like it's more consistent. And like another one,
yeah,
like that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. The I never back then too, when I was hanging out in New York a lot, it was not really to eat. We were
right,
boozing back then.
Is it the same scenario with bars too? Like, is more fun on the East Side there too?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm different or whatever, but I didn't ever care. The handful of guys that I would go down to see, we could be sitting in one of their apartments or in the bar that we used to go to the same bar a lot, and then or some Italian restaurant and hanging out. It didn't matter. The company was more important to me than the venue.
Gotcha.
I mean, and honestly, as long as it wasn't just blaring music so you couldn't talk, that was an immediate non-starter for me. So if I couldn't hear them talk, I'm like, I'm out. Or I'll be outside smoking a cigar when you guys come get me when you're done. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the company was way more that I was interested in.
Well, I think that winds up being true. When it's good friends, that often winds up being true.
Yeah, and I wasn't a beer snob or anything back then that I turned into a little bit later in my life. So it was just like, whatever. If they don't have any beer I'll just drink whiskey. If they don't have that, I'll drink cider, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Okay, I guess we can bring it back to the present then. I'd wondered about that for a while, though. I was just like, what was it like? You know, do you have any favorite spots to eat and so on? But it sounds like it was all pretty good over there. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I won't delve into that.
A lot of good memories.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine, you know. Many people, all of our friends who've lived in Manhattan for a little while have good memories, so that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right, anything on your mind in terms of things you were wondering about?
Well, how are you feeling, first of all?
I'm feeling good. I was scared off from running for the last 3 weeks, and I felt it today when I went back to run. And the reason I was scared off, because I just saw so many people on the streets, and that just freaked me out. And The reason why Kevin's asking me how I'm feeling is because I felt terrible on one of the nights early in the pandemic. It was I don't remember the exact date. It was probably week two, wasn't it? Like, what episode was I doing at that point? I don't know, but it was the same night that ESPN replayed the 2006 Rose Bowl, a day that will live in USC Trojans infamy, of course. But but a great game, there's no question. And that was on. But while that was on, I was really, really sick. I don't know if I had coronavirus. I really don't. But I felt bad. My head felt like crap, and I just didn't want to move for most of the day. And I think I remember the day before I was running, and I was starting to feel pretty bad after the run. And that kind of started my not running for a while. I felt awful.
Thursday, April 2nd?
It was.
Friday, April 3rd?
It was Thursday, yeah. That was the day.
There you go.
Week. It was Thursday, yeah. Thursday night. I just felt horrible. I made pizza with, like, a pizza maker. I have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pizza maker that my sisters gave me for a gift. And I made some pretty good
pizza.
Wait,
when did they give it to you? Like, when you were a kid?
unbelievably, it was more recent than that. It was a retro design, obviously. So it was.
Do your sisters know that you're, like, grown up with, like, your own place and your own job and car and stuff?
Yeah, or
did they get you the pajamas with the feet after that?
No, I didn't get pajamas.
Are you the youngest?
No, I'm not. I'm not the youngest. Second oldest.
Oh, wow. So you're the middle child?
Kind of middle. Yeah, sort of. Since there's four siblings, it's not.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I'll see.
So, sort of older half, but not oldest. So
that's more, pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a good spot. It's a good spot. But I think they just wanted to give me a pizza maker, and they just saw one of the Ninja Turtles on it. Like, that seems kind of cool. He was a big fan when he was young. And
well, this will ensure he never has a girl over.
Well, I put it in the closet. I put it in the closet.
Oh, okay.
You see, I thought this through. I put it in the closet most of the time. And then when it's time to make pizza, I take it out. So.
Right, and if you do have a lady there and she's like, let's make pizza, you're like, I think we should just call for a takeout.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. But
You said you had a pizza maker. No, I was some other guy.
So,
unless, of course, she's into them, you got to find out. You'd be like, well, what are your thoughts on turtles?
Yeah.
And she's like, I kind of like the animated ones. And you're like, oh, well, I have a surprise for you.
Well, I didn't have any women at the apartment that evening because we aren't allowed to have people over anyway. And so being as sick as I was, I just made pizza. And it was pretty good. That was like the one good thing that happened that night. I had to drink all kinds of water. And then I guess at some point during that evening, I texted you about it. And you're the only one that found that I texted. I was so freaked out over it because I didn't know. Did I have it? You know, if I told anybody else, I felt like people were going to flip out over it. Because, like, oh my gosh, you got coronavirus. You gotta be in a quarantine for like 14 days. So I was just out of it. I just wanted to lie down. And I did. And I watched some of that 2006 Rose Bowl, which I'm sure everyone remembers. And then after, like, you know, like for half the game, I just stopped. I'm like, I'm done. And then I lied down. And it was so bad that I just went to sleep. Like, I didn't do anything. Maybe I had some music on, and then I was gone. And then I just woke up in the middle of the night. And I guess I went to the bathroom. And then from that point on, it got a lot better. And I'm very thankful. But it's a very frightening moment because you do feel like my head was getting hot, definitely, but I wasn't doing any of the respiratory stuff. That's why I didn't completely buy into the idea that I had actual coronavirus because I could breathe fine. But yeah, that was as sick as I have been since this all started. And I think by Saturday I was starting to feel normal again. And then by Monday I was back to being 100%, but not to the point where I wanted to run. And then and then at that point I was just like, well, there's so many people out there anyway. I'm just gonna take a breather for a while, not go outside. So there you go. That was it.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're feeling good. And even though you were sick, had a fever, you had the presence of mind not to freak out your family and to just notify the one guy who wouldn't freak out, because you called the guy who had, you know, three arteries 100% blocked and had his chest cracked open, and, you know, that guy was, doctor was playing, you know, tiddlywinks with his internal organs.
Yeah.
Because that guy's not going to freak out about a fever. So you made the right decision.
Thank you for that. And I'm glad that my instinct was good to me that night, because seriously, you knew how things were getting at that particular week. And that's when it was starting to explode. So certainly,
yeah,
if I told anybody else, they would have just flipped out. There's no question. And I was flipping out myself. I didn't even know. Like, I was shocked. I couldn't find, I wasn't shocked, but I didn't have a thermometer. I was freaking out over that too. I'm like, I don't have a thermometer. How am I going to know? How am I going to know? And I even emailed my doctor about it. I'm like, what's going on? No, I think I emailed my doctor about the asthma I had. And I think that may have been before or after the fact. That was different. So never mind. That was different. But yeah. So I had to tell someone, and I'm glad you were there for me. I mean, that meant a lot, Kev. That really did.
Anytime, man. Anytime.
Yeah. And so thankful to have gone through that very quickly, because seriously, like, it was pretty much like 36 hours after I was good again. And
yeah, right.
I had no idea that was going to happen, right? So it's like, it's good stuff. You haven't been sick at all during any of this, have you? Have you been all right?
Yeah, we actually, the whole house, we all got sick in February. So there's
really?
Part of me that thinks we all had it. Because we just got back from Miami, which is like, you know.
Oh, dude.
It's got everybody flying in and out of there. And there's talk about, I mean, that's pretty, with the cruise ships down there. And so we were in Miami from February, I think, like 13th to the 24th or something. So we were there for a while, like 10 days to 11 days. And I was working for my wife's company at the South Beach Food and Wine Show, which is this enormous, you know, 20,000 people in these giant tents on the beach. So, I mean, I must have interacted with at least, like, face-to-face conversations, probably 6,000 to 8,000 people over 3 days, as you can imagine. You know, every couple minutes, a new person talking about my wife's company for them, and then hanging out, you know, going out for lunch and dinner and stuff. So when we came back, it went in order. Cody got sick. He threw up and did some other stuff and had a fever, but it was 24 hours and it was gone. And then Suni got it for 48 hours, and I was like, oh, you guys, this sucks, but I had nothing. And then, of course, when she finally feels better, to the minute, I'm like, oh, what's going on? And I had, for 5 days, I was warm. I didn't have any breathing issues, so that was good. Mm-hmm. But two nights, Dave, I shit you not, I had to sleep on the bathroom floor.
Ooh.
Like, my insides were so uncomfortable that I just kind of had to stretch out on a cold floor to make it feel better.
Wow.
So I have no idea what that is or was. And then my mom, who came to visit us, when she left, she got sick when she got back to the Cape. So
oh, no.
Something went through the whole house. I mean, it's February, so
it's
flu season anyway,
like
they say.
Yeah.
But,
oh, my goodness.
You know, that stuff could have been around. I'm convinced, I was telling my wife this the other day, I'm convinced that this virus has been around for longer than they're.
Oh, there's absolutely no question. It's absolutely, absolutely true. There is no doubt that we've had it in the States for like months.
Right.
I really believe that. I truly do. And there are friends of ours who you may even know from the show. I'm not going to name names in this case because I don't know how comfortable people are going to be talking about it. But I can count at least three people. Two of them felt like they actually did have it. Like, they actually outright said, I think I had coronavirus. Although they didn't get tested or anything because it wasn't severe enough that they needed to. And one other who had been sick for 2 weeks solid.
Yeah.
That's not... What else could that be? To be sick for that long? And, like, that is... I thought it was actually even 3 weeks. It felt like three. And I feel really bad for my buddy, you know, when that was going down. But he's recovered too. And thank goodness for that. Yeah, I mean, that makes you really suspicious because it all was kind of happening around that time. It's definitely been in this country longer than March. It has.
Yeah, and I had friends who like didn't get like totally, you know, 100 and something fever, but they're like, you know, for like 5 or 6 days, I had no, you know, smell or taste.
Yeah.
And like, boom, right there, that's a huge symptom of it. They just, it didn't manifest in the fever or the respiratory illness, but it attacked whatever, you know, part of your body does the smelling and the, you know, so it's nuts. So we'll see. This is a wild time to be alive, man.
It is, certainly is. But what's really great, the upshot of it is that a lot of us have recovered since that time. That is really cool. And I think the mystery is myself, because those symptoms I felt for like 2 to 2.5 days. I'm like, well, could I have actually had it if I only had experienced that for 2.5 days? But
yeah, you could have, because I mean, you're young and strong, so you could have just handled it a lot better. You know,
it is
people
very
who
possible.
Are compromised.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's why I say with like my wife, 2 days. I mean, she's kind of like you. She's really good shape and takes care of herself, and you know, that's why, you know, I don't worry about her at all when she goes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got her mask on and whatever, but like she's as healthy as a horse. So
yeah, that's a good point. I think you have a point on that. I mean, I feel like I certainly thought even in the weeks leading up to the shutdown, like not even before the shutdown, but kind of as we were getting close to it. I thought that maybe I would have been caring at some point, because I just did the math. I'm like, I'm at UCLA, thousands of kids here from all over the planet. Then we have participant people coming in who are from all over the planet too. And then I live in Santa Monica, where we have people from all over the planet. Maybe not quite as much, but still.
Yeah, just the contact, like, you know, the fact that you get a couple of everyone who's got it can get a few people, and then they get a few people. You're like a stone's throw from LAX. I mean, there's no, the international implications of that airport alone is just ridiculous.
Definitely. You know what's interesting? I almost took a flight. Remember when I did the 10K? My original plan was to fly there. I didn't do it. I changed my mind. Boy, that might have saved me or a whole lot of other people grief. That's interesting, right? Like, I'm really thankful I did that now. But
yeah.
Never even knew, but I may have saved lives, as corny as that sounds, by not doing
see that. Not all heroes wear capes.
Yeah, they don't all fly either.
That's true.
Yeah. So, yeah, good stuff. Yeah, no, I mean that. I think the bottom line here is I think it's been with us for quite a while, and it's just that we didn't know what it was yet. Yeah.
Right.
So, I guess we're out of time. Any other thoughts you had before we go?
I mean, that's a good way to wrap up the quarantine episode.
That's true. We kind of did kind of break that down. But, you know, since that time, I think I've been a lot more careful. And I think even though not running for 3 weeks is hard, I felt like that was justified. I think it was just too weird. I just needed to make sure. And now I just did my first run since that time, and, you know.
Nice.
I'm sore, but I think I'll be okay. So.
Good man, good man. Get back on it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I mean, I guess for more than anything, I just like running. I just want to. I didn't gain that much weight during most of that period when I was inactive, but it doesn't make me think that it doesn't justify my not running, is my point. Because I don't run to lose weight per se. Like, it helps certainly, but there's a lot of other reasons that you run. Blood circulation. Energy, testosterone building. You know, there's a lot of good stuff that comes with running. So there's a lot to it. And I like to do it. And I guess that's the other half of it. So, what's your exercise like right now? Like you said, you're doing walks. Are you able to do anything?
It's terrible right now. I mean, I've had probably 10 days now, the longest stretch of my life with a just awful back pain.
Oh man.
That's like, it's borderline. For the first 6 or 7 days, it was like shooting pains. Now it's more of, I'm into like the throbbing section, but yeah, I had heard it 2 years ago, you know, lifting some stuff, and it's just never been good since.
You know, I feel like the back trouble comes for all of us eventually. It's kind of been worrying about that for probably the last 5 years. I mean, I guess if I keep running, I'll be okay. But I kind of want to work the abs a little more, too, because back trouble usually begins with, like, the lower midsection, the lower section of your, like, the midsection kind of. Like, that's where posture comes from. So running isn't really going to work on those, on that midsection. But I could try other exercise to do that, you know? So I guess. But anyway, going back to what you were doing, that sucks. I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah.
Dude. I don't know how you, and once you get a back problem, man, it just doesn't go
away. Yeah, I'm trying to work my way through this, but we'll see.
It's been done.
Oh boy. Looks like Cody's waking up over here. Oh, I got him on our little video here.
All right. Well, Kev, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, you too, man.
Yeah. All the best to you, Cody and Suni and yourself. And we'll get through the rest of this together, yeah?
You got it, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Take care.
Okay. All right.
Bye, Kev. That's Kevin on the Cape, from the Cape now. I never asked him what part of the state he lives in now. Let's not worry about that. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that. That quarantine episode, I hope, lived up to the hype for all of you. And we certainly enjoyed it. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed doing it. And on we go to the letter R for our next episode. I am Dave Medina. You can find us on Twitter at DidCow, on the web at DidCow.com, Apple Podcasts, Dave in the City Out West. We'll see you next time. So you